Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turf Sup Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning into the Water Zone Show this evening.
All right, and I'm listening. Good afternoon and morning and nights and wherever you are in the world, you got the right spot. You're at the Water Zone, and we appreciate you joining us. I'm Rob Starr, along with Mr. Chris Davies, and we'll introduce another lady coming on here in just a moment to join us. Oh, heck, I'll do it right now because she's just as much part of the show as everybody else is. Miss Chris Austin, who's the purveyor of Maven's Notebook. Welcome, Chris Austin. Welcome, Chris Davies.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you all doing?
Hey, it's nice up here. It's beautiful.
No, same down here, Chris. We're doing great. Chris, as you know, I was in Arizona last week, and Rob and I did the show hand in hand, and it was great to have you on as well. As though, even though we get a switcheroo for you, and we did it kind of, you know, as the old saying goes, bass awkward, right? We did your segment second instead of first.
Are you allowed to say that on the radio?
I believe I am.
Well, the lawyers just called in. I have to clear something with Mr. Davey. They want you to define when you said hand in hand. Do you want to clarify that a little better so we don't get sued from anybody?
Yes, we were sitting at the same table.
I'm just kidding.
As we did before. But, yeah, that's good. That's good. We should identify that.
Only kidding.
Full disclosure.
Yeah, I'll keep my day job and won't do this funny jokes anymore. Sorry about that. So weather here is wonderful. It's 81 degrees. It's sunny. And we're preparing when Chris Davies was here. I was telling him about in our private community here, we have a place where they put on concerts. And we have a big one coming in. It's KC and the Sunshine Band. And they already have blocked it off. The chairs are already up. 10,000 people on Saturday night coming for this thing. So it's going to be a good show, I hope. And we're all set. We got third row. But I was going to take a picture and send it to both of you. I mean, it's filled with chairs from everybody's houses here.
Are any of those chairs yours?
Yes. They're lawn chairs, basically. So I can't imagine 10,000 people here for this. So it's going to be pretty outrageous. Anyway, I'm excited. But we're here for a couple things to talk about water and what's happening first in California. So, Ms. Austin, what do you see as the biggest issues this week or water news that we need to talk about? Because there's lots of it.
Oh, boy, it is there. Well, I guess the one story that really is taking traction is the number of steelhead that have been apparently they didn't die at the Delta pump, but they were caught near the pump. I'm unsure of whether they died or whether they were just because they have a system to pick up these fish when they arrive at the pump before they get in the pump, and they pick them up and they put them in a truck and they take them into some place in the Delta and dump them far away from the pump. Because once they're at the pumps, there's no place for them to go. So I'll just use the term caught, okay? So they caught a bunch at the pump, and steelhead are an endangered species, this particular one, and there are limits to how much steelhead they can catch at the pump per year before they have to shut down the pump. And the number took a very steep jump back in February, I believe it was. And so there's been a lot of concern about that. And they've had to pull back the Delta pumps now because of the fish being there. And they're trying to figure out how this situation came about, because usually they're familiar with the migration patterns of the fish, and this is something that hasn't really happened before. So maybe they had a lot of baby steelhead for this year or what. They're not sure, so there's an awful lot of science going on right now. There are a lot of scientists are out in the water measuring things and trying to, you know, figure out what's going on. They get the limit of how many fish that they can catch at the pump. That limit gets reset on April 1st. So they don't have long to go, but it's been a great concern because this is the time when, you know, the snow is melting and it's running into the delta, and this is when we really want to pick up our water for our water supply. This is the season, and so there's a lot of concern about not being able to pump. And they haven't been able to pump at a very strong rate for quite some time. And this has resulted in less water flowing into San Luis Reservoir, which is this joint federal-state project that's south of the Delta. And San Luis Reservoir, the water in that usually goes to, well, it's split half to the state and half to the feds, and specifically a lot goes to Westlands Water District, which is, they're like the newest agricultural area on the map. They were went into development, built the water project in like 1960, like John F. Kennedy hit the blast for the reservoir at San Luis, which came to become Westland's water supply. And so with this regulation in the Delta that's restricting the pumping, they're not getting a lot of water filled up at San Luis Reservoir. So I'm now getting into the big point. They're getting ready to announce new water allocations for the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project. They released them back at the end of February. They were rather low because they didn't take into account all of these storms that we've had. So they're going to be releasing new allocations in the upcoming weeks, and they are expected to be more. However, for everyone south of Delta, that means the State Water Project, Southern California, and also Westlands and other parts of the valley, if the allocation isn't going to change much because they haven't been able to put much water in San Luis Reservoir, which is where those supplies come from. There. How was that for a monologue?
Well, I'm sure Mr. Davey will enjoy that because he's an avid fisherman.
Well, I got to tell you for sure, Chris, I'm going to have to look up that article. I did see the article on the NOAA fisheries one from, I think it was this past weekend, on how salmon are adapting to diverse habitats because of, you know, climate change and all that stuff. But the one you just mentioned, Chris, I got to tell you, man, I must have missed it. And now you piqued my interest.
I think the press release from the environmental organization came out, it might have actually been the week before, actually, now that I think of it. And then it just took that long to, you know, for the news to get into the to the mainstream. So LA Times has written on it recently, and other posts that other people have. But that was like, that's one of those things. If, you know, that's why you should be reading Maven's notebook if you care about this stuff, right? Because, you know, that story did not hit the newspapers for, I don't know, at least a week or so. The other big story of the week, that you would get only from Maven's notebook for the first couple days, was that the court upheld the State Water Board's new flow regulations for the San Joaquin River and the tributaries, which is going to require a lot more water left in the river, which means less water for farmers that take from that system, from that river. And so they upheld all you know, they denied all 116 claims by 11 defendants. So that is like a big win for the State Water Board, and you know, they will proceed to enact these new regulations, which are means more water in the rivers and less water for the farmers. So,
I guess you know, I was speaking of that. I hear UC Merced is worried about the risk to agriculture with little or too much. You know, what's not happening with rain for them, but yet there's some storms packing in, I think. That's what was in your paper today. More snow to come to California and northwestern
U.S. Two more storms coming. Two more.
Yep. Yeah. I don't think they're meant to be as big as the one like we had a few weeks ago. That was a monster storm that shut down the interstate for, you know, gosh, 3 days, I think. But more rain coming. And it's turned out to be a pretty good water year, all things considered. We're kind of in the averagey zone, and with all kind of luck, it'll stay that way. So I think we should be having a pretty good year for water, and I don't think we'll see much restrictions anywhere. Although, you know, again, we all need to always use water more efficiently and
Absolutely.
Never waste it.
Absolutely, that's dramatically important. What is anybody in California doing for World Water Day coming up? Any big deals going on with any of the water agencies or so?
Well, not that I know of, and I'll just be honest. At Mavis Notebook, every day is World Water Day. So,
I love it, Chris. Good job.
Absolutely.
No, I don't really. Although I did send out a fundraiser with the World World Water Day theme to it, but so I used it as a fundraising tool. But no, every day is Water Day at the Mavis Notebook. Yeah. We're exclusive, right?
Well, we like that.
Since we broached the subject a little bit, Rob, so maybe we should, you know, tell our listeners, right? It's World Water Day is actually sponsored by United Nations. It's the United Nations or the UN World Water Day, and it's actually tomorrow, March 23rd, Friday.
The 22nd.
Yeah, the 22nd. You're right, the 22nd. You're right, absolutely right. And I should pay more attention to the calendar, right, Chris? So, But it's this year, I think the meetings are in Frankfurt, Germany, and Water for Peace is the theme, because there's a number of countries, struggling countries throughout the world, most notably in the Middle East and North Africa, or MENA as it's referred to. 2.2 billion, with a B, 2.2 billion people still in that region alone that are facing water scarcity. So something we should all be concerned about.
Yes, and we should be thankful for the water that we have, you know, that comes to our house 24 hours a day. Some countries don't get that. So it is a good time to sit back and reflect on that.
And there's plenty of cities in the U.S., like in Mississippi and places that are into those situations, which is bad. Hey, I understand that the State Water Board held some workshops this week on, again, trying to revise some draft regulation for water use efficiency.
Oh, yeah, these are the Making Conservation a California Way of Life regulations. Yeah. So we've been working on this for a while, folks. This legislation actually passed back in the Governor Jerry Brown days. So, I mean, this has been a long time in coming. And they've been working very hard to kind of figure out how to do this. The State Water Board held a workshop, and they took comments on their newly revised version, which, you know, extends the timelines, sort of, you know, loosens up some of the formulas a touch, makes it easier, makes it so that more communities that are disadvantaged will not feel these impacts them. And this was something that was kind of important because, you know, implementing these sorts of things to cut down on outdoor water use and indoor water use, but outdoor water use in particular, it's something that's, Southern California can have enough people with enough money to do that, but there are a lot of communities where people just don't have that kind of money to switch out irrigation systems. That's very expensive. And there was a big concern that in these communities, the only way they would be able to comply would be just to shut off outside irrigation altogether. And then you just have, like, dead trees and dead lawns. So they made that, you know, they sort of addressed those concerns. They loosened it up. And the people that, the conservation people that are for this are very disappointed, and they want the water board to go back, you know, to what they had. But the water agencies are of course, you know, happier with the looser regulation. They had a workshop yesterday, and it went a full 8 hours. I haven't listened to it yet. I'm going to be listening to it and sort of summarizing it for my readers, are my donors and sponsors in my weekly water blast. So right. If you're really into this, then, you know, you can donate to my website and then you can hear about it. And I can tell you what they said next week too. So,
you know, the big deal a lot with the water agencies, they're going to be selling less water. They're going to have to raise the rates. And to get people to do what they need to do, it's going to cost them millions of dollars. And
they have to, you know, talk people into it. People don't have to do it.
No.
And, you know, there could be a situation where a water district is trying to get their customers to reduce their use, and they're just saying, you know, no, not going to do it. You know, my mom is in her 90s. She's very unhappy about these water efficient devices. She says, leave my appliances alone. I don't want a low water washing machine or dishwasher.
Yeah.
Leave it alone. But you know, and they're going to have people that are going to be that way. And you know, this still is the United States of America, so you can't go and force people to do something like that. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's tough. What's happening out here? Also, I was reading this morning in your maybe it's notebook about a thing about evaluating underground CO2 sequestration in California. Which is it's a funny story, but go ahead.
Hot topic.
Yeah, it's a hot topic, and I think the best thing I can just say is that, you know, you should go read this. The guy, Edward Ring, that wrote that, he writes a lot of these commentaries and a lot of these analyses. He's a smart guy. It's definitely he takes the conservative approach to things as opposed to, say, an environmentalist approach to things.
Right.
That's just his approach. That's not necessary. I'm not saying he's anti-environmentalist, but that's not his approach. And, you know, he makes a lot of points, and I don't think he's wrong about, you know, there are some things you may not agree with, as, you know, but he's not, he makes some good points. So it's definitely worth, you know, going and reading what he has to say.
I think he's very practical in his thinking.
Yes,
is the way I view what I've read, all the things he's ever written, and he doesn't try to put a bad spin on anything. He takes what he has learned or what's given to him, and he theorizes about it. He thinks about it, and then he writes what he believes. And I find him to be pretty truthful. I mean, I laughed when I read the article. Only because I know everybody's questioning this on and on and on forever, but I think he did a good job on that.
Yeah, you know, and maybe you ought to see if he, you can have him on the show.
That would be awesome. You know? That would be awesome.
I mean, he went and talked to, you know, the MODOC water policy forum that they had last year, so
yeah,
I bet you
right.
would, you know? I bet you
yeah,
would.
Yeah. Mm. I'll give Miss Tiffany Bach a call and get some information about that. So
good
that
for you, Rob.
Out.
That's the way to go.
Anything else, Chris, that you got that's a hot topic that we should all know about?
No,
especially for those who haven't gotten your Mavis notebook yet, because you got to do that, everybody. You got to go there and become a subscriber, and if you want to become a sponsor, do that too. It's the best way to get news about what's happening. And I had to interrupt that to say that because Chris is the one who puts this all together. And again, I say I don't know how she does it in 24 hours every single day, and she must be working 40 hours a day to get this done. But but we appreciate it. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sitting here flipping through, seeing what there is. There's just so much going on. Oh, yeah, there's signs of algae again, the harmful algae that in Oakland's Lake Merritt, which could be a sign that there's going to be another algae bloom in San Francisco Bay, which we had a year or two ago. It was really bad.
Yep.
Bad. So that may be coming back. You know, algae blooms are going to be the problem. We're probably going to see a lot of them this summer. You know, the ocean is at record heat for the last 12 months, and the air temperatures are at record heat for the past six. So it's going to be a very, very hot summer, folks. So, mm-hmm. you know, get ready.
Absolutely.
Grab your misters.
Well, we're up against our commercial break. Go
hey,
ahead,
Rob.
Chris. Yes.
Yeah, Rob, I was just going to say one more thing because last week, you know, because of the show, we did a little bit backwards in terms of first and second segment. We usually share some economic data, right, housing starts kind of thing, and we didn't get to do it. So just in case our listeners were looking for that data, I don't know if either of you saw it. I know, Rob, you did because I talked to you, but Chris. Economic data-wise, housing starts were down significantly, you know, early part of this year in 2024. January numbers came out a week and a half ago, 11 days ago, down 15% in January. And so that's a bit of a trying number to look at. But in general, if you look at the trend from spring of last year to spring of this year, it is holding steady. It's dropping a little bit. So even though you see that 15%, you got to remember that back in the late summer and fall, there was a pretty good housing spike. So, you know, and as they say, everything evens out. If you don't like the weather, wait 10 minutes.
Well, you know, both of you, Chris, you know, Pam, my wife was telling me today, she's been reading articles about this Howard Hughes Corporation who plans to build another city here next to, well, it's part of Buckeye, but they're looking at building 100,000 homes, and they're pushing, trying to push as hard as they can to get everything all squared away to start that. And they already picked the name of what it's going to be called. I think I told you it's going to be a big deal. So you know, they expect 100,000 people for this thing. And
not a great name for a city. Big deal, you know, but, you know, okay.
No, but the big issue here is the state saying there isn't enough water to last 100 years, and they're saying there is, the builder, the developer. So that's going to be a nice little argument that's going to go on for the next couple of months. But it should be really interesting, and I'll keep you guys included on that because it's going to make a big deal here around here if it happens. That's even though Buckeye right now is the fastest growing city in the United States. Adding another 100,000 homes to this other community they're talking about is just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So
sounds like reminds me of Southern California.
Yeah. Well, to our listeners, please go to mavensnotebook.com. As I said just a little moment ago, become a subscriber, become a sponsor. It's a great way to get all this information. And like Chris said, you'll read stuff in here that's not out in the regular media yet. So she knows everybody. She does a great job, and we're very blessed that we have her on the show every week. So, Chris, thank you very much. You stay nice and cool this weekend, and if it rains, keep covered.
Will do. Good evening, everyone.
Have a great week, Chris.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next week. All right, we're going to take a little break, commercial break, and we'll be back in a few minutes, so stick around. And we have a special guest coming up all the way from the East Coast, so he can tell us all about what's happening in Jersey. All right, we'll be right back.
Out there, you're on your own. Do more. Do it faster. Do it better. The work is tough, and building an experienced team is even tougher. The moment you've got the game figured out, everything changes. It's hard to know where you stand, but in here, you'll find your footing. It's a place that's as much a community as it is a store. A place where knowing you and your business go deeper than simply knowing your name. A place where the solutions aren't limited to what's on the shelf, and the experts behind the counter pride themselves on going beyond the call. In here, you'll find people who see eye to eye, who stand shoulder to shoulder, who work side by side to build things, great things. In here, you'll find common ground. We are Site One. Stronger. Together.
KCAA.
Well, all right, everybody. Welcome back to the second half of the Waterstone Radio Show. I'm your host, Chris Davey, along with the all-knowing ever-present Rob Starr. So listen, we have a great guest today, recommended by a couple of our Toro colleagues, as a matter of fact. His name is Greg Rogers. If you're there, Greg, welcome to the Water Zone. How are you, sir?
Doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing great tonight. Our listeners, guys, I'm gonna give a little information. So Greg is the recently elected president of the Irrigation Association of New Jersey. He's also a contractor and the owner of Garden Irrigation. And look, update here, we're going to talk a ton about stuff here in the next 20 to 25 minutes with you, Greg, but including, you know, your role at the IA and the 50th anniversary and some of the recent legislation in New Jersey. Smart irrigation, et cetera, et cetera. There's a bunch. But for right now, why don't we let's see if we can get you to tag into that way back machine, Greg, and tell us a little bit about how you got started in this industry, a little bit of bio, if you will. What attracted you to the green industry back in the day, and how'd you get to where you are today?
Okay. So our family business was founded in 1966, so I was born into the industry. My father started our company in Brooklyn, New York, and he literally stumbled into it. He was installing his own watering system for his house. A neighbor saw him, asked what he was doing. He explained it. Neighbor asked if he could do it for him, and he said, "Of course I can." Came up with a price, and the rest, as they say, is history. So he kind of worked his way through Brooklyn and out into Staten Island, Long Island, and New Jersey. And now we're into the early 70s, and he saw the growth in New Jersey. And he moved our family out there. And we've been in Marlboro, New Jersey, since 1974. And we've obviously grown and prospered. Me personally, I went to school at George Washington University, got a degree in finance, and then came back to the family business. And, of course, along the way did the hard parts, which was here's a shovel, learn how to dig holes, learn how to do connections, and exactly work our way up. One thing that's definitely for sure in our company is the only way to gain the respect is to be able to do the job. And I like to think everyone on our team knows that whatever it is, if you give me a shovel, I'm not going to be as good or as fast, but I know how to do it.
That's a pretty good story for sure. I mean, I tell you, so you mentioned a bit about, you know, the philosophy behind the company. What about the history? What about garden irrigation history? Who's there now? What's their surface area? How many contracts do you have? That sort of stuff. Do you do mostly residential, commercial? You know, give us kind of a 30,000-foot view.
We are a team of about 40 to 45 people. We do a mix between residential and commercial. We don't do any golf. Our team is the best around. We cover most of New Jersey and into eastern Pennsylvania, into Bucks County. So our primary counties in New Jersey are Monmouth, Middlesex, Somerset, Mercer, Union, and Ocean. So kind of that whole middle of the state. And our office staff is just unbelievable. They handle upwards of 6,000 customers. And our service team, same thing. They give everybody the time they need. There's no limits on our time, the way we run our business. No one is ever rushed. When we get to your property, the goal is to get that property in perfect shape by the time we leave, so we know you're good for the season. What else can I tell you? We run 2 to 3 installation teams, and all they do is installations. So we're not trying to juggle between, well, today we're going to do an installation in the morning and try to catch up on service in the afternoon. We personally don't like that model. Everybody has their jobs, and everybody's trained for their jobs. And the biggest thing about us is everybody has been trained internally, and they've all been taught the methods that my father worked his way through and created. And I kind of joke that if you're a football fan, there was always the Bill Parcells coaching tree. In our industry, there's the Shelly Rogers irrigation tree, where there are probably 20 to 30 companies in business because they worked for my father at one time or another.
Wow, that's a terrific story. So was this growth, you know, did it happen steady over the years? I mean, back since 1974, or, you know, have you seen spikes? Has it been a growth spurt for you recently, or, you know, kind of how's the growth looked?
The most of the growth was organic, where just like when he started, people see us, and we are a brand in this industry, in this area of the world. We have done some small acquisitions over the years, and one thing which we could talk about later in our industry, especially here in the Northeast, is it's aging out a little bit. And we try to get new and young blood into the industry. And that's one of the reasons we train internally, so that we have people with a fresh outlook and who are going to grow to learn, understand, and love this industry and everything that comes with it. And there's a nice lifestyle that could come with it. You know, my favorite thing is when I see someone who works for our company and they say, hey, Greg, I'm buying a house. You know, I'm getting a mortgage. I'm having a baby, whatever it is, that's the ultimate pride. And I kind of tell a lot of my customers, my folks who work with me, that I don't take it lightly that we have to take care of 40-plus families to make sure that everybody eats and thrives and does well. And that's a personal satisfaction that I get from what I do.
Well, hi, Greg. This is Rob. What a great history and philosophy that you guys have. I'm a Jersey boy, just so you know. Englewood Cliffs on the other side of the state. And my dad was a Brooklyn guy. He was born there. My mom was a Bronx lady. So I'm an East Coast guy, but I live out in Arizona right now. But got a great story, and again, your dad had a great philosophy, and that you're carrying that through. Do you have any other siblings involved in the company as well?
No, they're not involved in our company. They've gone on to do similar things, and they're off on their own. My father retired. I wouldn't say he ever really retired. He loves to know what's going on. We talk every day about what we're doing, what we're working on, how we're going to grow, what we can do to be better.
Yep.
And one thing that I definitely don't take for granted is to have that soundboard that's been in this industry and just knows everything, because he has almost 60 years experience, is priceless.
Oh, absolutely.
And a lot of people, if you thought, you know, if you had that soundboard, how much better you could be. And I think that's one of the things that differentiates us and makes us as good as we are.
Oh, well, that's awesome. I know you're on the board of the Irrigation Association of New Jersey. Maybe you can tell them a little about your role in that organization and what you see. And I know they do a lot of education, but I'll let you tell us a little about that and what you're seeing and doing there.
Yeah, so I just actually changed to be a past president. I did my term. I took over as president, I think, about 3 years ago. And like you said, education is our primary focus. One of the nice things about New Jersey for all customers is you have to use a licensed professional. Just like hiring a plumber or an electrician or HVAC, when you hire a licensed irrigation professional, you know it's someone who's been trained and has the right equipment, the right tools, and knowledge to build and maintain the systems. And that we owe to, you know, a couple of gentlemen who I always look at as the forefathers of this industry here, and they realized back in the late 80s and early 90s how important this was, and they carried that through. So the Irrigation Association is kind of our vehicle, and we put on educational seminars in the summer and primarily in the winter when the guys have some time off and can catch up and do these credits and learn. And the classes have been great. We have different instructors, and they come from different manufacturers, whether it be Toro, Hunter, whatever, and different supply houses. So the whole industry really gets together to promote this and have it live on.
That's awesome. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, it's pretty neat to be a part of and to steer for the last few years. And again, the main thing now is to try to drive that young blood into the industry, and that's our focus for this next group that I'm kind of passing the baton to. And we'll talk in a little bit about the laws and what we've worked on the last couple of years and what we were able to accomplish.
Yeah, we can do that, but I got a little bit of a surprise here for you, Greg. We got a guest on the line here that wants to come on and say hi, maybe prompt a question to you. He's one of our colleagues at Toro. His name is Mike. Mike is on the line right now. Welcome to the Water Zone, Mike.
Hey, thanks a lot, Chris. And hello, Greg. How are you?
Doing great. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, we outnumber them now. It's two past presidents to, well, I guess it evens it up to two talk show hosts. So
we have numbers.
It's a good time. It's a good time. So. Yeah, no, you know, I'm gonna foot stomp something here. Greg did a phenomenal job. You know, I was past president or president, I don't know how many years ago now, but seeing Greg run the IA and handle the board, the team, the way he did, very professionally, you could easily see why his business is so successful. You know, his leadership style is no nonsense, and you know, for me being in the military for 30 some odd years, I really appreciate that. You just gotta. He got a lot of good things done in a short period of time, and I know he's still involved in some of the initiatives that are going on, and so it's just been a great pleasure working with him in that capacity. So, great job. And then I'm also going to share, and I don't know if I missed it, but Greg's dad was also a recent recipient of the New Jersey Irrigation Lifetime Achievement Award. And when I was president, that was one of the initiatives that I put together. And if you see the long list of winners, or not even winners, recipients is probably a better word, it's a very revered group of people who started the industry out here in New Jersey in the Irrigation Association and just really kept it going, like you know, Greg said, with the licensing and so on and so forth. His dad to be a part of that elite group, you know, I know I'm super proud, and I know, Greg, you are as well, and so he's a well-deserved award.
Thank you. Yeah, Mike and I lean on Mike a lot for what we were able to do these last few years. he really gave us a presence in the social media and the online spectrum between Facebook and LinkedIn to promote the IANJ, and we really have a great reputation, and a lot of it is due to what the work that he did. And God, who knows how many years ago you were president, Mike, but something in our blood, we just don't, we always want to see it better and bigger and stronger, and it's nice to share that belief with someone who, you know, really worked as hard as you do as well. So I do appreciate everything you do.
Quick question for both of you. So what piece of legislation do you think the state needs to adopt next?
Mike, you want to take this? You want me to?
I was going to say, Greg, you want to take this?
Yeah.
Well, no, I'll tell you what. As you know or may not know, last year New Jersey adopted the pressure regulating spray body law that went into effect. And to me, that is probably one of the best pieces of legislation that came down. After we have the opportunity to kind of explain the science behind it and the benefits, you know, it really is just it's taken hold, and contractors are definitely seeing the impact. So, you know, the recent legislation, that pressure regulating spray body law, to me is great, and they just passed it in New York as well. So pretty much the whole Northeast is covered. I would actually like to see efficient nozzling, or efficient nozzles, I should say, come into play a little bit more. I think that's an easy, fix for a lot of inefficiencies that we see and that we, you know, come across on a daily basis. You know, one of the reasons I like the pressure regulating law is there's no learning curve. It doesn't add any time or any labor to what we're already doing. Right, and I think it'll be the same kind of thing with, you know, with efficient nozzles. It's not adding labor, time. It's just a matter of doing what we're already doing with a better product. So that's the low-hanging fruit that I'm grabbing. I'm going to pass the torch to Greg and see what he has to say.
And Greg, would you want to see something that has a check valve also? Of course, those people who cut lawns and the heads got chopped off, do you think that should be added to the list of what should be required?
Yeah, and again, that's an easy thing as well, to just put a check valve in, and it could go at the manufacturer level, is a no-brainer, piece of cake.
Sure.
Just like with the pressure regulating and what Mike is introducing with the nozzles, things that are that easy, like you said, it's a low-hanging fruit, and that legislation got very quickly and easily into the state. One of the nice things about New Jersey is we are conscious about our resources, and I think very similar to California, where we try to stay ahead of it because we know it is endangered almost, and it could be finite. You need to take care of what you have.
Yeah.
So, and that's what led us to the bill that we actually got passed this past year through the IA, which was pretty amazing.
Yeah. Now you help contractors with licensing, correct?
Yes. So in order to get a license, you need to have a certain amount of hours and time in the industry on a payroll to substantiate it, and then pass a written exam. So it really makes sure that if you're going to be licensed, you are truly trained to do what we do. And the requirements are pretty stringent. I mean, I took this test over 25 years ago, so it's obviously pretty far removed. But as far as the continuing credits, it brings everything back to the top of mind, and you still have it back in your brain somewhere. And you encounter it all the time, and it's a resource. So even as the licensed professional in my company, and I think I have two other people with licenses, whenever someone has a question, they feed off of us because we know all the answers because we've lived it, studied it, and you retain it.
Yeah, that's good. Chris, go back and jump in.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, you should. I'm not going to dissuade you at all from leaning on Mike Edmonston at all. I mean, the guy's fantastic. I think he's got a million horseshoe crabs saved, and he's got a co-host as like Rob and I. His co-host is Oscar. Mike, how's things been for you lately, buddy?
Well, irrigation-wise, things are going great, you know, here in New Jersey. I think Greg would concur. The weather's been mostly favorable, with the exception of today and last night, you know, the temperature dropped. But we're off to an early start here. I think there's a lot of positivity in the market. I know there's a lot of projects that are already taking place and that are in the on the books. So what I thought was going to be a little bit of a challenging year, I think it's still going to be challenging, but it's definitely, you know, people are definitely a lot more optimistic. And, yeah, so things are off to a great start.
Agreed, Mike. So let me ask you one more question, because I think there's one of the Toro fold that's also involved with the IA, if I'm not right, and that's why I'm going to ask you, Mike, because I think I want to make sure I get the facts right for you and Greg. But isn't one of the Toro fold also been recently elected to the board of directors as well?
Yes, yes. Actually, John Gum, he's the Mid-Atlantic district sales manager for Toro and Eurotroll, and he was on the board a couple years ago, and I think actually Greg went out and convinced John to, you know, get back and, you know, get involved again. He did a great job in the past and brings a lot of diversity and different skill sets to the table. And you know, I'll give Greg the kudos, you know, for re-enlisting John. And you know, I know John is heavily engaged and involved with the board now, and just help him move that needle forward.
Let's
John was an integral part.
I was going to say, where do you guys, start with Greg first, where do you see the future of water in New Jersey?
So on one hand, we are pretty fortunate. The last time I remember being on a real drought was 1999, and we were on very restrictive parameters as far as how many days you can work. Some towns had no irrigation at all. Over the years, it's been pretty sporadic. And the irony, of course, being if you're in a drought, you need the water the most on your plant material and your lawn, but you need to conserve the resource. Mike, do you remember any kind of severe droughts in the last couple of years?
No, we really haven't had many droughts or a severe drought in quite some time. You know, I think the biggest challenge that we faced was, you know, COVID came to town and the irrigation industry in New Jersey was deemed, and I got little air quotes up, as non-essential. And I'll give kudos to, you know, a bunch of people, and some of the people from the Irrigation Association of New Jersey got together. And within a matter of hours, we had a letter drafted, and it was hand-carried into Trenton. And by that Saturday morning, which was the next day, we were deemed essential, and, you know, the contractors were able to go to work. And you know, that's a flag I'll wave for the next 20 years. It's a testimony as to why these industry associations are so strong, because there's neighboring states that didn't do that, and they were not allowed to work for a long period of time. And while, you know, there were some people who chose not to abide by the regulations, they, you know, many people were fined for doing work when they weren't supposed to. So the IA and some contractors, some manufacturer reps, and some distributors got together, like I said, and got that done in a real quick time.
With the other associations, we've had other states send representatives to our meetings because New Jersey runs such a strong association, and that's a true testament to what we've been able to build, that they come to us and they say, hey, we see what you guys are doing. First, how do you do it? How do you have so many members? And how are you guys getting all these things done? So the collaboration that we have when we do our meetings, and, you know, during my tenure, like Mike said, I'm not out to waste any time. And if I have the floor and we're running a meeting, we're done in a certain amount of time, and we hit our initiatives. And anyone who takes a task on is held accountable, and we're able to put things over the finish line.
Oh, that's awesome. My final question before I turn it back over to Chris is, so if the governor gave you a phone call tomorrow and said, hey, Greg, we're going to dub you the czar of water for the state of New Jersey, what would be the top two things that needs to happen and that you would do?
I hate to look backwards, but we just got this law passed, which was so monumental in getting the rain sensor that it actually is operational or having a smart controller. Well, that's the big key. We
right.
laugh, but so back in 2000, New Jersey made a rain sensor law that with every new installation, there had to be one.
Right,
but
I remember that.
Unfortunately, they didn't think forward and say, what happens in, you know, 10, 15, 20 years when that thing doesn't work anymore?
Yeah.
And
well, even,
most people don't get.
No, I was going to say, even less than that, I won't mention the brand, but they have a captured area that if you don't clean it out, it's not going to be accurate at all.
Right. Yeah, we wouldn't use that one either.
Yeah.
But,
I was being nice.
Don't think to laugh.
Yes.
So by getting this law passed, and it was introduced nearly 20 years ago, and it just never got any traction, and we pushed really, really hard with our lobbyists, and we had to meet with the realtors because they had always been against it, and they finally got on board. And then we worked with our local government, with our senators and assembly folks, did presentations, and we got this thing over the finish line just in January of this year.
That's excellent. Well, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm going to turn this over to Chris real quick because I have to do what you do when you run a meeting because we have to turn it to NBC News. But Chris, go ahead and take it from here.
Sure. I was just going to thank you guys for coming on. Greg, absolute great story, and wish you continued success with your past president role as from the IA and with the new folks that are taking over for you. And also with garden irrigation as well. Listen, I'd love to talk some more and maybe we can get a chance. I really wanted to get a chance to get into how you guys feel about being the person that has to tell all of your customers and stuff that they need to comply to this legislation. I mean, that's got to be a tough role to be in, but I think that's going to be a story for another day, guys. But hey, Greg, Mike Edmondson, thanks for calling in. Greg, thanks for being on the Water Zone with us this week. How can people get a hold of your company, Garden Irrigation, if we got interested listeners, Greg?
www.wetlawn.com or 800-WET-LAWN. So wetlawn.com is our website. And just click on the Contact Us. And everything can get routed right to me through our office. And we're happy to talk to folks.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate it very much for joining us on the Water Zone. And we will get back to you and follow this conversation some more. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thank you.
One thing we always tell our listeners is please help. And if you like green, you got to have blue to do it. Thank you. Talk to you next week.
NBC News on KCAA Loma Linda, sponsored by Teamsters Local 1932, protecting the future of working families, Teamsters 1932.org.